Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on what is becoming a wet Wednesday, as we are on the, we are on the far edge of the ripples, if you will, from Francine, which Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, who is alongside here in the studio, Jason and I were just looking at the where it is, the projected path. We're going to get some rain, but I don't think we're right now in for anything that looks terribly bad. As a matter of fact, it could be beneficial.
Yeah.
We need some rain.
Yeah, no, this could be good for us in terms of just getting some rain. And this is kind of that soaking rain that,
yeah,
that does you a lot of
right
good.
Right now, I mean, it's fine. It's just been a steady, like drizzle.
Yeah,
maybe
correct.
A heavy drizzle.
Yeah, just you know, obviously praying for the folks down in the Louisiana
New Orleans.
They're just not, they just can't handle much rain
well,
anyway.
Well, it's, I mean, the thing is, it's below sea level anyway.
Correct.
It's, I mean, it's
well, like I said,
when there's a lot of rain, it is big trouble
is.
In New Orleans, and
they got a couple inches of rain, I guess, yesterday.
They've been talking about a possibility of 2 to 4 inches of rain per hour.
Yeah, and
when Francine
a couple
comes
of
through.
Hours like that for New Orleans spells
and
trouble.
Oh,
and
big
so,
time.
Yep. So obviously keep those folks in mind, and any kind of the spinoff tornado areas, all those folks. But
yeah, tornado watches all in effect will be in effect all the way down to Panama City, I believe. So, so that's the thing. It's you said it has just been upgraded to Category 2?
Yeah, I'm checking to see.
I can report live from the hurricane desk here on Francine. We've got I can give you local hurricane statements. Jackson, Mississippi's National Weather Service says expected landfall this evening on the Louisiana coast, increasing impacts tonight through Thursday. There are also updates from the New Orleans, Mobile, and Lake Charles areas. Lake Charles has a tropical storm warning in effect. Mobile is expecting
a lot of rain.
Rain. I mean, obviously not an impact the same way that Louisiana has, but there are tropical storm warnings in effect for Baldwin Central, Mobile Coastal. I mean, a lot of the areas in there. All the way into the Pensacola area, like you said.
Yeah.
So it's and even Fulton Beach, Destin. Mm-hmm. You know, they should all. I mean, it's a little bit having grown up on the Gulf Coast in Florida.
Me too.
Like, I mean, that's like a pinball machine. Like when a hurricane gets into the Gulf of Mexico.
You usually have an idea where it's going to go.
You have an idea
it's
where it's
going to hit, and it's going to turn right.
But you just run the anywhere in the Gulf could be affected,
right?
And once a storm gets, I mean, what by the time a storm gets in there, you have a general idea where it's going to go. But a storm can go; it can
all
bounce
of a sudden
off.
At the last minute. It can. It can.
I mean,
can
anywhere from Miami to the Texas coast, you know, everywhere along the Gulf is at risk. Every season, and yeah, there's a significant storm bearing down on Louisiana right now.
Yeah, up to 100 miles an hour, so it is up to Category 2. It'll drop back down pretty quickly, I think. But this is more storm surge, rain, wind than it is wind.
The water more than it is the wind, and it's Francine. I'm pretty sure that's the first time we've had a Hurricane Francine. About the only thing Francine just brings to mind, old ZZ Top, but. But yes, so that's we'll keep you advised. And again, it should just be we should get a couple of inches of rain somewhere around in that. But that should be the case, and it should be gone by Friday in time for time for the weekend, high school and college football. And Jason, as I mentioned, here with us from Auburn Undercover, along with Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls here on the Wednesday Drive. And we'd love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, That number's 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you get your podcasts.
And, Jason, I mean, the weather, I guess, sort of today and tomorrow is what a lot of people felt like it would be Sunday when they woke up after a very disappointing performance by the Tigers this past Saturday against Cal.
Yeah, heavier rain and a lot more wind is what it felt like.
There's been a lot of wind.
Yeah, it has. No, it was extremely disappointing. I don't think there was anybody that left Saturday that thought anything less if you were Auburn fan, coach, player. It didn't matter who it was. a really disappointing performance. And all the things considered, you look at everything that considered, the turnovers is the thing that kept you from being able to do anything else. I think was it three of the five turnovers were three plays or less. Two of them were on the first play of a drive. Right. There were so many times where you didn't get to see what would happen on offense because you'd already turned the ball over.
And so, I almost dismissed the fifth turnover because it was so late. It was desperation time.
You're just trying to make a play.
You're getting close to desperation time with the fourth interception, but it still does. Or no, with the third interception. The fourth interception is the final one.
Yeah, the third interception. Right. I mean, you still had 2 minutes.
The third one was you had time. It was approaching desperation, and then you were probably going to have to throw the ball more than you wanted to.
It was just a forced interference and one very good throw.
And it was probably his biggest mistake of the game, from sort of like we've gone back and watched the fourth and two and the third interception, and those both feel like a questionable decision to go deep on the sideline to a covered Cam Coleman with open receivers over the middle. Bill, am I being fair?
No,
assessment of
that. That's to me when you go back, and obviously you go like 48 hours. You go like look back on it after the initial thing and go. And you watch it, and for me, it's impossible to see what happens. When you're on the field and I'm looking through a camera lens,
you're right.
It's impossible to see what happens until you go back.
And it was possible for us in the press box.
Correct. And then you watch it, and you see some things, and you go, there were guys. And I knew there were some guys, but you go back and look and go, there were guys on most every play. This one did not feel like last year. Last year, you felt like, man, there's nothing to do except to take off running and see what you can find. That was not. And people talked about pressure and things like that. Yes, at some point, he's the guy that's in charge of it. He's played a ton of football. He sets the protections. I know there were mistakes, but there was also time to get the ball.
There was opportunity.
Yeah, correct. And so this one felt like a lot more on Peyton Thorne, and I think Hugh Freeze has said as much this week. What will it look like? I don't know. I don't have any idea other than I think we're going to see Hank Brown. I think we'll see Peyton Thorne. I don't know how much of either one.
Or in what order.
Or correct. And so I do think we're going to see that because at some point, and Bill, we talked about this, and you've heard it, I've heard it, everybody's heard it this week. Peyton Thorne has been better in practice. There's been no question about that.
Yeah, nobody argues that.
As he should be. He's played a ton of football. He should be better in practice. At some point, you have to go, okay, well, there has to be more than that. You got to carry it over at some point.
Usually the starting quarterback is the best quarterback in practice.
Correct.
That hasn't stopped other coaches in the past from benching a starting quarterback who is not producing enough in the game to stay as the number one quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean there have it wouldn't be the first benching in the history of the quarterback position.
No. And that's it. And you do that because the guy did not perform as well.
But usually the guy who starts the game is the guy who's been the best in practice.
Correct.
And sometimes that's not the guy who finishes the game at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
It's not as though his weekly performance in practice changed. It's based on what happened during the game. So I would agree with you on the. I think it's a pretty critical time. Something I want you mentioned who we're going to see. I keep going back to those first couple of drives after the touchdown drive, and the relative abandonment of the run game on the first, you know, I'd say the 4 or 5 drives following the touchdown drive. I think Jarquez gets 1 or 2 touches. I'm not sure the other 2 running backs touch the ball. I would think that's something Auburn goes back to and says, maybe even though we're really excited about the additions at wide receiver, the strongest position group on this team is running back, and those guys need to touch the ball more than they did on Saturday for this offense to be at its best, regardless of who's playing quarterback.
But context matters.
Sure.
So Jarquez runs the ball on the first possession. You get 1 yard. You throw it. You throw it down the field and score a touchdown. The second possession, he runs and gets 7 yards.
And it plays callback.
You have a 15-yard penalty. Right. So you're 1st and 22. All of a sudden you go, well, how much can you run the ball? They actually convert the first down by throwing the football. The third possession, you get it. And I believe it was interception on the first play off the hands of a wide receiver. The first one, 1 yard loss on first down. So you're 2nd and 11. So where have your opportunities been to establish a running game when you're 1st and 22, you have an interception off the hands on first play, and then you're 2nd and 11?
And 2 lengthy cow drives mixed in there.
So you look up and you only have 1 more possession in the whole first half. So part of it was circumstance. Where you get the 7-yard run and 15-yard penalty was a huge play in the game. Mm-hmm. And obviously you get to 3rd and 2 and 4th and 2 big plays, but those are massive plays.
It also sounded like Hugh Freeze, I think this was Monday, he sounded like he was pretty happy with what happened when Auburn threw the ball on first down. Or at least he said, well, that's not true. He said he was pretty happy with the way the offensive line held up when Auburn was throwing the ball on first down. He was more concerned with the 3rd and long pass protection, but he said,
Correct. That's pretty much everybody when you start going, hey, tee off, we can't run the ball here.
That's why you're trying to avoid third and seven. Yeah, that's why you're trying to avoid third and seven.
They were off schedule, and then you had the early turnovers, and so it all snowballed into just a complete malfunction on offense. It was every level, every part of it. But it comes back to there were opportunities. There are opportunities to make plays.
Right.
And the flip side of that is that even if there weren't opportunities to make plays, if you just don't turn it over, you win. Because Alabama's living proof. Alabama was terrible offensively for 55 minutes Saturday. They got outgained. I mean, USF was running the football, controlling the ball.
I hated the field goal.
21-13, I turned it off. I was like, if you kick a field goal right here,
I hated it.
Then it's over.
You're at the goal line. You're at the goal line, down 8 on the road.
But they didn't try
to beat Goliath.
But they didn't turn it over.
They didn't.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, if you do all the other things, don't turn it over.
Williams looks okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Kay and Lee.
You make
a play on defense, and then you look and you go. I mean, they had a 36-yard drive and a 21-yard drive after 2 turnovers. Defense after the first half of the first quarter, other than those turnovers.
No, I thought the defense.
They responded
down the stretch.
They responded really well.
End of the first half and second half.
Because they kept getting thrown out there.
That's the defense, sort of the defense I've expected to see, with the exception of
creating turnovers.
You got to take advantage when a ball's in your hands, man. That was a walk-in six.
The two sacks from Keldrick are at the tail end of the first half, where he's able to get after Mendoza a little bit, but it was those first. It seemed like especially the first 2 drives of the game when Cal was able to have 8 plays, 75 yards, and 13
no,
plays,
no
45.
No question in my mind, even though Keldrick didn't admit it, no question in my mind that they came out very differently than Auburn expected. I mean, you got Jay Knott. They haven't thrown it a ton.
No, and you're not expecting that quarterback to be able to.
They came out throwing
the
football and doing very controlled passing game, mm-hmm. taking advantage of the short throws. I mean, they came out, I think, very differently than Auburn expected.
They seem to think, and this is credit to Cal, that they seem to think there were a couple of specific matchups they thought they could exploit and win. And they did for the first couple of drives of the game, and Auburn made some adjustments, and it seemed like you saw More Antonio Kite in the second half, a lot more Caleb Harris in the second half, and I thought that was maybe Auburn moving some pieces around and
good
trying
bit
to
of Sylvester Smith.
You saw Sylvester Smith out there in the second half as well. So I mean,
I thought it was good adjustments. They said, hey, look, even though this is our most experienced guy and a guy like Keontae Scott, we got other guys we feel like that might be a better matchup. And Antonio Kite gave up a touchdown, but he was in coverage. Guy made a good throw and he just kind of lost it for a second. But yeah, I thought defensively. Hard to ask much more from those guys. Once again, the thing that is a little concerning to me is that I still believe in two games Malik Blockton's your best interior defensive lineman. He's a true freshman. That's concerning because those guys, Isaiah Rakes is solid. We still haven't seen anybody go, hey, I'm going to go take it over. And that's one of the things we've been talking about because, like, Cal's offense is okay. You'll see a better offense Saturday.
You're going to see quite a few offenses.
Yeah, that are way better than anything you've seen to this point.
Talking to Dorian yesterday, who's super impressive, and has gotten off to a pretty good start to his Auburn career through two games. He was saying that the performance of Malik and Caleb Harris were the two freshmen he singled out and said he's never really been around true freshmen who can play like that. To start their careers. He told a story that Gote a week in did not. Were you there with me when he told you? So he told the story that Gote worked with that group for about a week, and then found out Caleb Harris was a true freshman, and could not believe it. Like was shocked. Dorian also said there was a time, I think in the opener, when he asked Caleb where he was supposed to be because he knew Caleb had done.
Yeah,
but it's Dorian. Well, Dorian's a fourth year college football player.
No, it's
but he's in his first year here.
In his first year, but he's still turning and asking the true freshman.
I know.
He's supposed to be. And then Malik is a guy. Malik and Jameson Travis was another guy he mentioned.
Bobby's coming on.
You know, these are two guys to think. Well, this is their first taste of college football.
It's also the
action.
Two guys I look at to me that have the most potential to be disruptive instead of just holding it down. The two guys,
Malik and Jameson Travis,
that have the most potential to be disruptive up the field, and that's I think two things you can build on a little bit.
Malik got a couple of good hits on the quarterback, flagged for one of them.
It was kind of iffy to me. Too.
I actually thought he had one that was more flaggable earlier in the game.
That may have been why he got flagged.
There was an iffier one earlier in the game that he'd gotten away with.
Well,
and then as we saw
the consistency of officiating. I wouldn't say it wasn't bad either way, but
it was
the two calls to be made and one to be overturned and one to be upheld.
Targeting
is about as bad as it gets.
Let me ask you this.
I thought they were wrong on both.
Because I usually you're one of my paragons here of like here's who I want to turn to if a call's correct. Should they have called DPI on the interception in the end zone from Cal?
I thought it was iffy.
That one's
the previous one to the Cam Coleman one I did not think was pass interference. On the sidelines where they called one on, and then they called another one. The other one was a little iffy. I didn't think at all on the first one they called.
I just thought the one in the end zone seemed.
They had a rough day too. Those guys had a tough day.
I thought the one in the end zone seemed like a play I see often.
Yeah, I thought it was iffy. Like, hey, I could see maybe, but the other one I did.
Yeah, and I guess maybe it's one of those things. Like, even if you're speeding, you know, you can't. The argument isn't that everybody speeds. Like, you have to follow the rules. But it's still. I was like, ooh, that's.
That's tough on the defender.
I'll tell you, that was a life raft thrown to Auburn.
Once again, a
life preserver.
And ones that didn't count, that Auburn scores a touchdown on, that could have been another massive turnover that you didn't have.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where decision-making, like it's worse than it looks because of some of the things that didn't get happen. Yes.
All right, we're just underway. Jason Caldwell with us here. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in here on the Wednesday Drive.
This is Lee County Revenue Commission.
321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan with Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Again, we'd love for you to join in. Anything on your mind, any questions, comments you have for Jason? Hugh Freeze on the SEC teleconference today. No real more news, but I mean, he continues to bring up the fact that, you know, you have to see on the field. The results have to be on the field.
I think early on, he talked about early on, he's seen from Hank Brown what he wanted to see from him, which is, okay, now the door's open a little bit. You need to step through it. And so far it sounds like that. Maybe the big thing to watch other than quarterback Saturday is going to be what the reshuffling of the offensive line looks like.
Yeah, now what we saw was what Jeremiah Wright had said, what we saw in that brief window yesterday.
And I've kind of been surprised a little bit.
Was, yeah, Dylan Wade moving
to right,
to right tackle.
Yeah, and I think
where he was a left tackle and has been left guard this year.
Yeah,
that's a big change.
It kind of surprised me a little bit, but I think if I remember right, I think maybe at Tulsa he was the guy that played the right side, so I think he's familiar with that.
And if they go with anyone but Ronan at right tackle, then it's somebody who's going to be making a big change, because those other three guys, Percy and Tyler, have been working at left tackle.
Yeah,
they don't appear to be moving.
They look like they're leaving them there. Hey, you've played two games, stay there.
Feels like the update there at left tackle is that Percy Lewis jumped ahead on Saturday.
It does feel like
it. Well, it's like Tyler had the better first game, struggled game two, and Percy played better.
I think the movements and things that Cal does versus what Alabama A&M for a young guy probably caused him some issues. I don't know that it's athleticism or talent. I think it was, hey, who am I supposed to get here? I think they overloaded at times and left a couple guys open. Percy's an older, more experienced guy, probably set up better for him. I've seen this. I understand what they're doing, maybe from a not a technical standpoint, but a communication standpoint, probably was a little bit easier for him. But
when Auburn falls behind 14 in the second half and you have to go to a more pass-heavy hurry-up approach, maybe that's something a little bit more familiar to what Percy has done.
Yeah, and I think some of the issues too Saturday was too tall, tried to go back in, tried to keep playing, and he just couldn't move. And
the
interception where Peyton got hit, his arm got hit. I thought the ball should have been out anyway, personally. But that was, he just couldn't. Too tall, just couldn't get to the edge and keep the guy from coming. But I think we'll see Tate Johnson and Braden Joyner at left guard. I wonder if we'll see Dylan Wade back at left guard and Ronan Chambers back at tackle.
You might see three different left guards.
We could see four or five different lineups.
Yeah. What's your sense of how Chambers did?
I thought he was solid. Yeah. I think obviously the level of pass rush was probably an issue at times. I think in the run game he's really good. I think he did a good job there.
Didn't he play on a team that threw the ball a ton?
Yeah, but you do that playing in the MAC versus playing, and you got to see a little bit of Alabama A&M. You get to see practice, but game speed. Hey, here's the other thing we have to do. Give Cal a lot of credit. I thought they did exactly what they needed to do.
They didn't turn it over, and they should have.
Yeah. They should have turned it over, but they didn't. I thought defensively, they said, look, we're good up front. That's the other part of this that I think Auburn fans are a little uncomfortable with. But it's just reality. On the lines of scrimmage, there wasn't a lot of difference between those two teams. Now, Auburn had better skill guys, but they're young. On the lines of scrimmage, there wasn't a lot of difference. I thought Cal and Auburn were pretty similar.
I thought Cal had the better first half on the line of scrimmage.
Keldrick is a difference maker, but their big defensive end was pretty good too. Their offensive line was pretty solid. I didn't think there was a lot of difference on the front lines of that game. That's where – we've talked about it. That's where Auburn has to improve. And when those things happen, you cannot give the ball to the other team a few times and go, hey, just take this. We don't want this possession. You can't live like that.
Yeah, no question. I mean, and New Mexico coming in this week, Jason, with a team that they had an open date this past week. They played a couple of ball games. Their quarterback is a guy that can be a problem. I mean, there's no question about that. They can put up some points. Now, defensively, they need to have found a whole lot of answers last week in the open day. Auburn should be able to move the ball and score points this week against New Mexico.
Yeah.
I think regardless of who the quarterback
is. Yeah, defensively, I mean, they've given up 96 points and almost 1,200 yards in two games. Montana State was week one. Now, Arizona threw it a ton. Noah Fifita was 422 passing against them. And Terrell McMillan had 304 of that, one receiver.
Wow.
So they gave up a 304-yard receiver a couple of weeks ago. They had a bye week.
That's a good game by the Friday night, Arizona-Kansas State.
Yeah, it is an interesting game.
That's a good, because those are two of the
– And two different types of teams.
Two different types of teams, two of the better teams in the Big 12. And Fafita's a superstar.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun.
Like, that guy, yeah.
Little guy that can play, but him and McMillan were teammates, so they have a connection. These guys played together in high school, and so they were really good high school. But similar type of quarterback.
They list Fafita at 5'10".
Yeah, he's 5'9".
Yeah, I mean, he's
5'8".
He's a 5'9".
And it's
dynamo.
The same guy this week. Auburn's going to face Devin Dampier. Now, he doesn't throw it as much, but he can really run. He's got 432 passing, four touchdowns, so he's been okay. He's also 164 yards rushing on just 18 carries. So he's a guy that makes some things happen. So Auburn working a little bit on kind of zone read stuff. This is a good preparation week for what you're going to see next week at Arkansas. Now, it's a different quarterback completely. Next week, 6'5", 225, long leg kind of guy. But you're going to see some similar things from New Mexico offensively. So it'll be a challenge for them. But you look at it, and this should be a game from a front perspective where Auburn should be really good. Now, New Mexico's offensive line is massive. They're 335, 340, 314, 320, and 330.
Wow, that is
so
that
they're
is
really big up front.
You would think Auburn would have an advantage athletically.
Yeah.
But still, that's a load.
Now on the other side, defensively, the defensive tackle, 285, 276. Nose guard, 301, 303. Defensive end, 252, 253. So that's not much size on the other side of the ball. They'll try to overcome by playing a lot of speed linebackers. Their Mike linebacker's 218. Their Buck linebacker, 221. Their weak side linebacker. I mean, like, this is not a big physical defense, and you look at it, and they've given up a lot of yards.
Mm-hmm. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Once again, love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We're halfway done here with hour number one of the Wednesday Drive. Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Dan with Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here in the studio. Drew at the controls. We were just talking about some of the games. It is not a marquee. I mean, they're not those games that you go, wow, when you see the matchups. I think there are quite a few really good games, though, on the schedule this weekend.
There's some really important games.
Yep.
LSU at South Carolina is a massive game for both those
teams.
That
is one. A week ago, nobody thought that game would even, you know, be anything after South Carolina struggled against Old Dominion. But when South Carolina goes into Lexington and just – they dominated
And then the other part of that is, too, is people are like, man, Georgia at Kentucky sets up early on. That's an interesting game.
Oh, yeah.
And Kentucky was awful.
They were. Brock Vandegrift has really, really struggled.
I mean, if Kentucky's a 24-point underdog at home this week to Georgia, and it's like if you start the season with two 24-plus point home losses in conference.
At home, yes.
Like that, and that's what Kentucky's facing right now, and it already happened. I mean, the time you didn't think it would happen would be last week against South Carolina.
Right.
That game's 31-6 Gamecocks, and now you're looking at Kentucky – I mean, if Georgia goes in there and does what a lot of people think Georgia's going to do, you know, Kentucky's it's an early big hole.
And listen, they're at Ole Miss, at Florida, at Tennessee, at Texas,
Kentucky.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean that's it. I mean you've got those games coming up no matter what, and you still got Auburn and Vandy, Louisville. I mean, like. Your road games, I mean, Ole Miss.
You've already lost a home game in conference play, which
Ole
means
Miss,
you need
Tennessee,
you need
Texas.
Yeah,
you need you to already road. You lose to Georgia, and you will. You already have five losses. And that would just continue the trend of a guy who's, he's done a pretty good job at Kentucky, but people have way oversold what Stoops has done.
Well, the path to 4-4 right now in the conference for Kentucky. Assuming they lose to
to Georgia, they've got to beat Ole Miss, Tennessee, or Texas on the road.
Zero, they have no chance.
Yeah,
they have no path
to get to four, to get to, and that's 4-4.
Yeah, you have no path
in conference. You have no path to 4-4. Mm-hmm. It seems like because
no.
and that's a tough spot to be in. in week two for a team that looked like they could, if a couple things broke right for them, they could maybe be a top half of the SEC team.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. Texas A&M, Florida, another one that's a massive game for one of those two teams. Now, Florida has some stuff coming down the line. For A&M, look at it here. Another team we're talking about before this, we're talking about NC State, and like, I just not a believer. I haven't been a believer in Connor Wegman, and he's done nothing in
right
so far.
Quarterback looked like a problem for A&M in the fourth quarter of that Notre Dame game, and I thought it would not be a problem for I mean there were people who thought Wegman was one of your I saw a ranking that had him ahead of Milroe. I mean,
he's physically talented, but once again, you take away weapons, they lose their best receivers, and they weren't real good on offense anyway.
Well, you know what matters, we've been talking about Auburn, it matters what happens on the field.
Correct.
Not in practice.
Hey, well, the same thing in Clemson, you can go on and on. There's a bunch of those things. And so but that's one that's there's a couple of those games you look at. Obviously, BC and Missouri is, I think a really good football game.
People want to know why the NIL market is what it is for quarterbacks. Watch, go around college football and watch that. Like, watch what some of the best programs are throwing out there at the quarterback position, trying to win a conference title, and you'll see. Like, it's a real luxury to have a difference maker at that position, because a lot of places are, you know, hoping they have one, or they're relying on somebody to make good decisions and sort of handle slash manage without necessarily taking a game.
And it also shows you have to have other pieces. You know, people have talked about, well, look at Miami. Yeah, they also spent a bunch of money, and their offensive line's veteran. They got some skilled guys outside. Like, it wasn't just that guy. The flip side, you look, and the guys that everybody had to have. I mean, we're just talking about Grayson McCall. Grayson McCall's not been pretty bad. There's been other, like Brock Vandergriff was a guy. Everybody, oh, well, he's a former big-time recruit. Well, he hasn't been very good. You have to have the other parts of those things too, and there's still the unknown when you haven't played. And so it's a crapshoot in college football without question. It's crapshoot in NFL.
Couple of coaches I know you like that are off to impressive starts to their new places. Bill O'Brien's got Boston College in the top 25. They go to Como this week and to take on Missouri. Matt Rhule, I think, has got a pretty good looking team at Nebraska with a potential superstar at quarterback and a tough. I mean, granted it was Colorado, but a tough seeming line of scrimmage.
Yeah, no, they definitely controlled the line of scrimmage, and that's what I expected. I also expected Colorado to be able to do something offensively. And they really didn't. I thought the black shirt defense was pretty good the other day, and they covered well. They just destroyed, you know, Shedeur Sanders over and over again.
Have you seen the play where Travis Hunter can seemingly make a tackle to stop the Nebraska running back from getting into the end zone? Drew, do you know what you're Drew has seen it? There's a play where a Nebraska running back's going in, and Travis Hunter seemingly decides to make a business decision and let the Nebraska running back score rather than attempt to make a tackle there. And it's, you know, it's,
well, his coach did that a time or two.
Yeah, here's what I wonder.
He's a superstar. Travis Hunter is. I'm not. I know.
And this is the world we live in, though. How long does it take before you go, nah, we're not playing anymore? And I know they're not going to do that. How long does it take if you're here and you two or three more games and you're terrible and you're not getting protected up front, where you just say, I got an injury, I'm not playing the rest of the year, and mail it in?
What kind of season are they going to have if Shedeur makes that
they
decision?
I don't know if they win another game if he doesn't play.
Yeah.
Because they're like he is good. He can throw it now. I think he's a good player. Don't like all the other stuff. But no, it would be an impossibility.
Would love to see in an alternate universe. Would love to see Shedeur Sanders on a major conference championship caliber team, and probably with a coaching staff around him that wasn't his father, who's been coaching for a long time.
I think he's Caleb Williams similar. I don't know if he's that good. I think, I mean, he is better than I thought he would be 2 years ago. There's no question about it. And I saw him in high school as a prospect. I did not think he would get to this level. He's been really good. But no, that one, going back to the coaches, you know, I think the NFL side of things, I wonder how much of an advantage that is when you think about trying to build it from the GM side of things. Boston College has gone out and gotten some transfers that have helped. Obviously, you know, the quarterback has been a big part of that. And then Nebraska goes NIL heavy and gets Dylan Raiola, and he's been pretty good. And so
they're going to be plucky in the Big Ten, I suspect. In a Big Ten that feels like beyond Ohio State.
Well, their schedule is about as easy as – if I remember right, I think it's about as easy as it can get in the Big Ten.
They drew a favorable draw, I believe, in the Big Ten, if I remember correctly as well.
So they've got Northern Iowa, Illinois, at Purdue, Rutgers, at Indiana, at Ohio State, UCLA, at USC, Wisconsin, Iowa, at Iowa.
They could.
So you miss Michigan, you miss Penn State.
If they win every game but Ohio State, what do you do with an 11-1 Nebraska team with that schedule?
I mean, you're at USC, which
there is at USC. At USC is in there. Okay.
But you're 10-2 for them. I don't think 10-2 with that schedule, who you would beat would be enough.
They'd probably need to win one of the two road games.
Yeah. Unless you've got a bunch of three-loss teams. Unless you don't have.
That's what we don't know. We just don't know what it's going to look like the rest of the year. But it's
and 6-7-2 in the Big Ten with that schedule might get you knocking on the door of the title games.
And the other part of this, getting back to Auburn, the other part of it is that we just talked about South Carolina and Kentucky and Notre Dame, like. Mm-hmm. This is reality for a lot of teams, and it's not just Auburn. About you think you know what you got, and it, one week it looks terrible, the next week it looks good, or vice versa, as you figure out all the pieces and all the parts
because
that come together.
Because there's so many new pieces everywhere.
Even with a quarterback that you think you know what you got, it's a completely different guy. And so you go, hey, Peyton Thorne, it didn't look very good last year, but man, it had any pieces around it. And now you go, well, there's some pieces around. It didn't look good again. Now you go, okay, all right. Mm-hmm. Now we need to take a look at this because there hasn't been really any reason to until this point because you're like, hey, there wasn't really anybody there to play with anyway. You've got pieces in place.
I've speculated earlier in the week, Bill and I were talking about, you know, did Auburn have confidence in the passing game because of the way they were able to throw the ball against Alabama A&M? And did Auburn have confidence in their passing game because of the way they moved the ball on that first drive against Cal, where Auburn has a couple of successful explosive plays through the air? And that sort of leads to I know you mentioned earlier, like, situation matters too. Like when Auburn mm-hmm. started these drives and how much time left, like that matters a ton too. Felt like there was a lot, like I thought the approach in the first half seemed like Auburn thought they were going to be able to throw on Cal. Like it made sense that they thought.
I think it was strictly, here's our offense. We talked about it in week one. Here's our offense. If we get this, this is what we're going to do, no matter what. If we get one-on-one, we're RPO. We're throwing the football.
Yeah, it seemed really simple. It's like, we got this. We're going to do that.
And it didn't work. I think now, no matter who the quarterback is, I think we heard him basically say, hey, we're gonna limit the playbook a little bit this week. To me, I think that means we got to take some things off the quarterback because he was a guy they felt good about. Hey, he knows the offense inside and out, but you still got to go execute it. I think now you go, okay, look, we're not doing all those things. If it's a run, you can still make a decision, but your decision now is not RPO. It's you keep – or give zone read it instead of, hey, we're just going to let you do everything. I think you rein some of that in.
How about this? We haven't seen that much Hank Brown. What's your sense of what kind of player he is? Like, what's your scouting report on Hank Brown, Auburn's backup quarterback?
I think if he's your guy, I think it takes away quarterback run a good bit. Mm-hmm. He can still run, but Peyton Thorne is an above average. He's an above average runner. Yes.
He's an above average runner.
I think it takes away a lot of the – and, again, if you're taking some of the RPO back anyway, then it may not have as much impact.
What you're hoping, though, is that maybe he gets the ball out a little quicker and doesn't have to.
That's it. I think you're – for me, and I'm – even with Peyton Thorne, I've been this way. my entire thought process for what Auburn's quarterback needed to be was Brock Purdy. That's all you need to be. You don't have to be anything else. But you have to be able to get the ball to your playmakers and let them make plays. We didn't see that last week. That's all you got to be. You don't have to be anything else. Can Hank Brown be
decision-making and accuracy.
Quick. Get the ball out of your hands. Three-step drop, deliver the football.
Accurate,
three-step drop, deliver the football.
That protects you a lot. It also gets the ball out to the guys that need to have the ball in their hands.
People would ask, like, I mean, especially when you get beyond Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, like sort of your superstar tier of quarterbacks, like what makes a lot of those other guys good? And it's correct, quick decisions.
That's it. The woods are full of guys who were extremely talented but didn't make it in the NFL. They're also full of guys who were not very talented, who made it in the NFL and played for a long time and were pretty good. Drew Brees was not the most talented guy. He was more talented than people gave him credit for. But that's not a guy that if you lined up 50 quarterbacks, he wouldn't be in the top 45
I would probably say Phillip Rivers is probably in that mix as well.
Now, Phillip Rivers was big, and it helped him some.
Phillip Rivers was big and tough, but consistently making correct, quick decisions.
That's it. The ability to anticipate. We saw that a little bit. Can Hank Brown do those things? The little sample size we've had, he looked like he could, but he hasn't faced pressure like he will face if he's the guy moving forward or would have faced on Saturday. We don't know. We don't know how he responds. I think we'll find out. But I do believe he's a guy that has a feel. But you just don't know how you do that at this level against these defenses, all those things. He throws the deep ball probably better.
Mm-hmm.
But do you need that in this offense because of your offensive line? Do you need to go, hey, we need to limit some of those things and go more crossers, do those things? Can you see? I mean, it's all an unknown. And until we see it, it'll remain an unknown.
All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one, our final segment with Jason. And I believe we'll get to the phones as well when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
What's up, guys? This is Bailey from 12K Salon. Are you unhappy with your current hairstyle? Or maybe...
Welcome back into the Drive. Final segment of hour number one. Our final few minutes with Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. Jason, I mean, I got to ask. I mean, because people ask me and want to know what you guys are thinking about the situation, recruiting wise. You know, what did Saturday? Did Saturday have any effect on recruiting? And a lot of folks concerned about, well, what's the latest on Deuce Knight?
Yeah.
He's been in town a couple of times. He still hadn't flipped.
Yeah, and I think he'll be back here in a couple of weeks. Uh-huh. No, I don't think anything other than you go, hey, I just want to make sure I'm making the right decision, those kind of things. I mean, Notre Dame had a worse loss than Auburn did Saturday. So if you're going, hey, individual games – don't matter overall, overarching
right,
to a
game
class.
Doesn't.
It might impact one guy a little bit.
Well, the thing is, if it happens over
correct.
And over, yeah,
correct.
You run into a situation that Florida had
last
year.
One individual game, you go like, yes, if you go up, you look and you haven't shown improvement, then what you've told guys is right now, again, they haven't added a commitment. And all these guys committed, and Auburn won six games last year, and so they're thinking this is the future. I think right now you're still selling them, and a couple of guys said it. Look, they told me they need me. I see they need me. Do you need to be better? Absolutely. But one individual game, it doesn't have a huge impact on guys. Like I said, if it's a few more, but even in it, like if you show some improvement and you're playing better, and I've said this Saturday, I'll say it again. If Auburn had lost that game 60-45, what would the feeling be right now? It wouldn't be like this.
No.
Again, people want to see offense, and I understand it. But if you had lost 60-45, I think people would go, we've got to get the defense fixed, but man, we got to shock when we score points.
Yeah, it would have
it's
shown,
just a different feel.
60-45 would have shown progress on one side of the ball, and I feel like the sameness of the game Saturday with some of the losses last year where it was sort of a slog offensively.
I think I see it. It's like you got to get better offensively. There's no question about that. It's Hugh Freeze's offense, Derek Nix, those guys we talked about on the same page. Now you got to go find a guy that can get you that on the field, whoever that is. And I do think no matter who the quarterback is Saturday, and I think we'll see both, I think we're going to see a scaled-down offense, and they're going to run the football more and maybe a little bit more play action. But I think you're going to see a little bit more, hey, let's – I don't want to say start over, but, hey, we got to take a lot of this stuff off the plate of the quarterback and get back to playing offense.
Great stuff as always, Jason. Let everybody know, how they can keep up with everything you and everybody there.
Yeah, you can check us out at AuburnUndercover.com, part of the 24/7 network. Like I said, lots going on, previews leading into the weekend, be on the road. I think we're going to see Auburn High Enterprise Friday night, That should be a good one. Obviously, Eric Winter's committed, and then some young guys to watch in that game. Omar Mabson, looking forward to seeing him for the first time this year. So got that going on. Check us out on our YouTube page, Auburn Undercover. We'll be live tomorrow night once again. Special guest there, so you can check us out. And looking forward to being back in the park on Saturday.
Yep. See you over there, Jason. Thanks
a
lot.
You watch some high school football?
Auburn Enterprise. Enterprise.
All right, we are halfway done. Love for you to join us in hour number two of The Drive, which is coming up.
Call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome into hour number two here on the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover with us in hour number one. Hope you had a chance to hear JC. If you missed him or any of the drive, drives in the past as well, check out our podcasts.
Podcasts of The Drive, available however you get your podcast. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to espnau.com and use the Podcast Center, and all of that presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We'd love for you to join in. You can call us on The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Anything on your mind sports-wise? Hugh Freeze had his 10 minutes or so on the SEC teleconference today, and obviously one of the questions was about quarterback. He reiterated that they need to see the results on the field. In talking with Jason and just, folks yesterday over around the complex as we got a little chance to watch some of the view, just 10 minutes or so of practice, but then talk with some players. Get a feel that I'll be very surprised if we don't see Hank Brown this week. I'm not saying starting. I wouldn't be shocked if that were the case, but I'm not going to be stunned if Peyton Thorne's your starter either, but I do think we're going to see Hank Brown against New Mexico.
Wanted to pass along some words. So we are planning on moving Tiger Takes to Wednesdays at 5:30.
Right.
It has been I guess we're still it's been tough for Eugene this week. There's been a bump in his schedule.
Yeah.
So I think we're gonna air it tomorrow or Friday. But the plan
will be moving to Wednesdays at 5:30. But this week has been a trying week, as you can understand, and with practice and the a little bit of weather situations. Don't know if that's affected anything, but yeah, we will not be having Tiger Takes this afternoon, but we're hopefully going to have interview with Eugene available either tomorrow or Friday, and then of course brought to you by 12K Salon.
Yeah, shout out to 12K Salon on College, and we may have. We may have a special guest joining us. I don't want to offer any promises here, Bill, but we might have someone dropping, because I got to record the Observer here in the next day or two, and I've got a special substitute for Ferguson who's got some family business to attend to this week. So I think if the timing works out, the special guest host may be able to pop in for a segment or two here in the final the second hour of the drive. So no Tiger takes today. Yeah, well, it might be. Okay. I mean, I believe if we keep your eye on the entrance and see if there's somebody there. But yeah, we might have a special guest here in for some part of hour number two because no Tiger takes today. So we've got something else we can do in the second hour here on Wednesday.
Again, we'd love for you to join in. Give us your thoughts if you haven't had a chance to get through on, Auburn football, the situation right now. The Tigers obviously 1-1 after that loss to Cal and New Mexico coming in this week. We talked about a bunch of games. Go ahead.
What are you expecting on Saturday? As you know, I'm curious. Yeah.
I don't know.
How do they use the quarterbacks? What does the game look like?
I think Auburn comes out with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, and I think they play well. And I think New Mexico has some serious problems defensively. Like Jason was saying, they've given up 96 points in their first two games.
How involved are the running backs?
I think Auburn runs it more. Yeah. I think I agree with what Jason was saying. When Hugh Freeze is talking about simplifying the offense, I think it's going to be less on the quarterback making all the decisions. I think they're going to say, hey, here's the run, unless you see eight guys or something. But, I mean, I think they're going to be more called plays where it's less likely to be checked. But if there's something obvious that it needs to be checked out of, you can see it. And I think Auburn needs to establish their dominance up front and with the running game. And boy, their backs ought to be fresh. I saw somebody posted, you realize Jarquez Hunter has never had 20 touches in a game? And then obviously, I don't know that Damari Alston's had 10 or Jeremiah Cobb. Auburn's got some guys that can be very productive on the ground. And sure, you don't want to ignore the talent that you've got at receiver, but you're not going to have Cam Coleman this week. We know that. Or at least we're pretty sure of that. I would be very surprised if we see Cam this weekend. And you've got some really talented receivers, but I think you need to put pressure on the defense to make them even more concerned with the run before you start worrying about taking the top off.
He's never had more than 20 carries in a game. His I believe his career high in touches is the 21 he had against Vanderbilt, which were 19. He may have had some returns in there as well,
but I'm just going
plays from scrimmage. He had 19 rushes for 183 along with two receptions in the win at Vanderbilt last season. It is important to remember that he spent the first 2 years of his career in a timeshare
behind another decent
who had a very impressive game Sunday. Tank. It looks like Tank, after an up and down first year in Jacksonville, reports were that Tank had a strong offseason. They've got ETN in Jacksonville sort of slated as the starter, but Tank seemed to be the more effective runner of the two in the game on Sunday. Wonder if he could play his way into a much larger role on a Jacksonville team that some people think could be a contender in the NFL this year. But no, Jarquez, I think folks have been wondering, leaning on a tailback has not necessarily been Hugh Freeze's style, right, Bill?
That's true.
As a play caller, even dating back to the time at Ole Miss,
At Ole Miss, it seemed like they rotated two or three backs most of the time.
Yeah, and usually threw it more than they ran it. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if it's a bit of an adjustment having a team that's maybe suited to at least attempt more power running than Auburn has thus far under Coach Freeze.
Yeah, but obviously the big question is, how's the quarterback situation going to be handled? And that's the one, I don't know. I mean, I feel pretty confident that we're going to see Hank Brown. Just don't know if it'll be at the – my concern is if Peyton is your starter, the reaction that he gets, I think it might be best for everyone, for Hank Brown to get an opportunity, clean slate. Let's see how things go at the outset. and then bring Peyton in. I mean, because I said it yesterday, I've said it a couple of times this week. If Peyton goes out and has a great game, that's not going to convince a lot of people that the problems have been solved.
I think that there's reason to give. I mean, look, deciding on which one to go with on Saturday, if you're reopening the competition and Hank Brown is back in the picture, you know, go with either of them, and you know, as long as they both get drives with the first team to begin the game. I think your point about the reaction is a good one, but I think you're probably inviting that reaction no matter when Peyton Thorne goes on the field.
Well, but if Hank Brown goes out and Auburn's up a couple of touchdowns when Peyton comes in, I don't know that it would be.
I still don't know what kind of reception Peyton Thorne gets.
Yeah, but I think it'd
Hank Brown plays well, I don't know what kind of reception Peyton Thorne gets when he comes back out there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I wonder, not that it should play a huge role in deciding who your quarterback is.
No.
But, like, I think that's something where, yeah, I mean, Peyton Thorne's probably going to have to if you're worried about how the fans are going to receive him, Peyton Thorne's going to have to play well against SEC opponents to win back.
And he can't do that this week.
And he can't
no matter
do that
what.
This week. I think that using, you know, if you go with Peyton, and the Peyton Thorne thing, I think that reaction, if he's out there on first and 10 and he gets sort of a chilly reaction from the Auburn fans to start the game, if he completes a pass, I think that mostly fades for at least for that drive. You know what I mean?
Until
a bad play or two. No, but I think giving it would seemingly indicate that you're going in a new direction if you start Hank. That's the one thing I would read into there.
Well, I guess it would. I mean, but again,
playing Hank on the third or fourth drive early in the game wouldn't necessarily show that you're going in a completely new direction in that way.
But don't you need to know? Don't you need to have an idea how Hank would respond if he were the guy? And I think if that's the case, it should be early. It should be at the beginning. I think it should be, again, I'll go back to it, and I know people go, I don't care what Nick Saban did a year ago. In hindsight, it was brilliant what they did against South Florida last year as they held Jalen Milroe out and played everybody else. And then at the end of the ball game, everybody's going, please put Jalen back in there.
No, I think that's it's interesting to say, like, this is going to be Hank Brown's game for multiple drives to see what it looks like to start. I think, and using the Saban example, I think that's absolutely one way to play it. With these quarterbacks, I don't know. I mean, I think that's probably that's I don't know. I mean, if you start, I don't know. That's probably the move. Yeah,
we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. What I was going to say, Bill, is I wonder if in hindsight the mistake was, we'll get to Bill in a second, but like I wonder if in hindsight closing off the competition as early as they did and saying, you know what, this is, you know, deciding after a week in the spring that Peyton Thorne was going to get the majority of the first team reps from there on out, or the entirety of the first team reps from there. I wonder if that's something now, because it's
no, I don't think so. Okay. I can't imagine it, because he was, like Jason said, he was head and shoulders better. He was better at every practice. He was better in every scrimmage. He was, and that carried through outstanding leadership through the summer and through the fall.
And maybe that's a reason to start him and show the team that it's still his team and his job, and then you get to Hank as early as you can if that's the second drive or the fourth.
And then if things go well, then you're back to the same old against Arkansas. And if it doesn't go well, you could cost yourself a game and an SEC game.
Again, I'm just, if the plan was indeed to, you know what I mean? Like if it's, you know, out of almost deference to the plan, but I also would understand why they would try to get Hank in early and get him as many reps as they can.
All right, we'd love to hear from you, and we'll get to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Bill is up first. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. I don't mean to sound insensitive or everything, but he is getting paid a lot of money to be the quarterback at Auburn, and you know, I'm not concerned about that. When you start getting paid to play, you're going to get criticism. This thing's been going on a while now, and we keep getting the same results. And, of course, I'm not coaching the team, Saturday, so I don't have any skin in the game as far as a career or anything. But I'm putting Hank Brown out there. I think this thing's going on long enough. And we see the same results. He's the best practice player. He's this, he's that. But on Saturday, it's the same thing over and over and over again. And, you know, like I said, I'm not, he's a fine young man, but business is business. And these guys are getting paid money now. When they weren't getting paid money, I wouldn't criticize them. I wouldn't call a show. But he's getting paid money now. And I don't know how that falls into amateur or professional, or whatever. But when you're getting paid money, you're not performing. Now, maybe the offensive line player wasn't that good. I don't know. I'm not the offensive line coach. But you're going to get criticism, and you might get booed because those days are here now. There was a day and time I'd never boo anybody, and still haven't, and probably wouldn't. But when you get paid money to do a job, you need to do it. And this is going on now for a while, and I think it's if you run Peyton out there, he doesn't do well. Now you're bringing Hank Brown in, probably in dire circumstances. And I say give him a start. Give him a start. I mean, you know, that's where I see it, guys.
Appreciate the call, Bill. Yeah, one thing I will point out again, and I said it yesterday, and I know there are obviously a lot of smarter people than I around that can say, look, I told you so, and I knew that Peyton wasn't going to be able to do this, but I still can see where Hugh Freeze needed. I mean, you needed to see how he reacted with all the new toys, with the new receivers, with the cohesive coaching staff. You needed to see that after he performed well in practice. So
the reasons to believe Peyton Thorne would have a stronger 2024 than he did 2023, I think were good reasons. Like, I think it was a compelling case as to what was different about this guy's offseason and what was different about the team around him and what was different about the play calling. And it is distressing, I think, how similar things looked on Saturday to a team that needed all those improvements last season. So it's I can understand why folks, you know, are ready to render a verdict now. I can understand why maybe folks internally would want to do everything they can to salvage the Peyton Thorne experiment before they move on to another quarterback, especially this early in the season.
334-321-1390. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Brett, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
Experience. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon, 22 minutes after 5 o'clock. And let's get right back. We have a special guest joining us here in the studio. Well, I'll tell you, we'll go ahead and introduce, but we want to get to the phones. Adam Cole from the Opelika Auburn News joining us here in the studio. How's it going, man?
It's another day in paradise, another day in very rainy, overcast paradise.
Today is much more like the way Auburn people felt Sunday morning.
Good Lord, no. It feels like Seattle out there, but other than that, no, just another hump day.
And we could have the weather could be, could be veering towards autumn, you know, once this rain clears and
I think we're warming back up again. Yeah, don't get your hopes up. Let's get to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Brett's been hanging on for a little bit. Hey Brett.
Hey Brett.
Hey guys. I missed the segment on with Jason. I'm curious what he said he thought maybe Peyton Thorne would do the rest of the way. But have y'all ever really taken a pretty deep dive into his statistics against teams that are good?
At Auburn, they're not good.
Well, I'm talking even at Michigan State.
He had a couple of good games against teams that were pretty good.
I know one of the knocks at Michigan State was that his worst games tended to come against Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State, which might be understandable because, you know, the whole roster sort of punching above their weight in those games against, you know, teams that sort of have out recruited Michigan State everywhere. But you'd still like, you know, a quarterback to be a difference maker or more productive in those games. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I think that's what Brett's referring to.
Well, Dan, in his big year where he had 27 touchdown passes, he got 18 of those in five games. Two of the games were against teams with losing record. The other one was Youngstown State, and then I think he played a couple of 7-5 teams, so 18 out of 27. And his percentages were, you know, pretty much along the same lines against bad teams and good teams. Clint Mosley threw four touchdowns against Florida one year. I mean, you can do it against teams that aren't good, but unfortunately, he just hadn't been able to do it against solid, good teams.
The point Jason made, you know, the closest thing I would say to a projection about how Peyton's going to do the rest of the way, we were talking about, you know, I asked for a scouting report on Hank Brown, and it sort of turned into a segment about what ideally Hugh Freeze and the coaching staff want out of the quarterback position in this offense. And it seems like, you know, the comparison Jason made was Brock Purdy with the 49ers, where it's like really just it's about accurate, quick decisions. You know, correct, quick decisions and accurate delivery more than taking the game over in some sort of, you know, Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson style. And I think that's what's distressing or disappointing. We get back into the D words from Monday, Bill. But what's distressing about what you saw from the Auburn offense on Saturday is you would think that all of that experience from Peyton would give him a leg up in making those accurate, quick, correct decisions. And that's not Dan, what you felt like you were seeing.
Dan, there's also another D word for throwing a bomb to a covered guy on 4th-and-2.
Yeah, well, you know what? There's a few other ones.
Not smart.
That we were saying. Now there's a few other D words. Yeah. Is, yeah, yeah.
Quack, quack.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah.
But, okay, well, I was just going to throw that in there. I know it sounds like I'm not pulling for him. I hope if he plays one more play, he just falls out and, you know, sets the world on fire. But, I mean, just based on what's happened, it's not looking that way.
No, and well, you missed Jason, and one of the things Jason said is, you look, it's you have to see it on the field. He was down there on the field Saturday, and he said he couldn't see the entire field, but he did feel that there were quite a few times that Peyton could have gotten rid of the ball quicker, and that's something, you know, he was talking about the interception on the interception where he was hit. And that there were opportunities to get rid of the ball before then, and that's something I know, Dan, you've talked about quite a bit. We don't know this, but it sure feels like at times Peyton doesn't want to rush into a mistake, but that can result in there not being the receivers not being as open as they would have been a split second earlier.
I'd love to get Adam's sort of sense on, you know, what he was expecting, what he saw Saturday, you know, where he thinks things go from here. Adam Cole from the Opelika Auburn News hanging out with us.
Well, I wasn't expecting what happened, that's for sure. Aaron Murray did a really impressive, and I guess impressive enough. I mean, he's a former SEC quarterback, but he did a breakdown of just like a lot of plays from that game and kind of dissecting what all went wrong. And, you know, kind of Bill, what you were saying, I mean, yeah, like there were plenty of instances of like not wanting to rush into a mistake where like the reality was, and I think some of this too was, I don't know, this was the thing I noticed the most, but it just seemed like anytime he dropped back, it was like 2 seconds and the pocket was gone. You know, that was the biggest thing that stuck out to me. But there were a lot of instances of, you know, in moments like that, like there was one play really late, I know, where he kind of broke to his right, and then, you know, the pocket or what was left of it kind of followed him, and he eventually broke left and made a play out of it. But like Murray pointed out that, like, you know, it's like if he's dropping back in like 2 seconds and boom, like I think it was Robert Lewis, he had like right there, mm-hmm. like wide open. And there was a lot of that I noticed in that video. But, you know, I mean, I think the biggest thing that stuck out to me, like, ultimately was it didn't seem like he was getting the sort of protection that he needed more than anything. And that's what I'm going to be watching, especially this week, you know, considering that it looks like Xavier Miller, you know, might not play, and you're going to have to reshuffle your whole offensive line. And, you know, obviously you're not playing P4 competition, but they're going to need, I think, better pass protection this week more than anything.
334-321-1390 is the number. We still got Brett, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, Bill.
All right, you got something else?
No, I'm good. Y'all have a great day.
All right, appreciate it, Brett. Good stuff, Brett.
334-321-1390. Uncle Ollie is up next.
What's up, Unc?
Hey, gentlemen, always great to talk to you. First of all, you know, we all know the backup is always the most popular guy on the team.
Of course.
So I understand that. A couple of things, though. I'm sure y'all read the same article I did today. I think it was Auburn Undercover. I'm not sure. But where Freeze said that he met with both quarterbacks Monday and went over the Cal film individually. And it was an eye-opening experience. Now, how would you take that statement?
I don't know. Now, all of us were there when Hugh's been talking about these things. Now, we weren't there at SEC Teleconference when he was on.
He talked about it before he met with the players during the press conference Monday. And then,
he talked about it on Tiger Talk.
Yeah, Tiger Talk on Monday evening. He talked about the, you know, how the meeting sort of went. And yeah, he said, I mean, I believe the first mention of the 15 plays, right, was that Monday press conference.
Press conference.
And that was his speculation. You know, that was sort of his assessment of how many missed reads there were by Peyton Thorne over the course of the game. And he wanted to go over those plays with Peyton, and he wanted to go over those plays with Hank and see, you know, what Hank thought the correct reads were in those situations. And, yeah, I mean, it was – I do wonder what he meant by eye-opening, and if that's an indictment of – the decision making of either of the quarterbacks he talked to, or if it's some personal realization that Hugh Freeze made about his coaching while talking to him.
And I'm guilty of reading tea leaves, but to me it sounded like he's like, well, crap, Hank's got it. I mean, he's acing the test here, and And I'm not sure that I knew that he could ace the test. I mean, that's the way I read that. Is eye-opening means I didn't realize the difference between this evaluation.
Well, I heard Hugh when he made those comments Monday night. And now it sounded to me when he was saying it that both guys gave the answers that he needed to hear. But there was one time when Peyton said he thought he should do this because he had Cam Coleman out there, when Hugh felt he should do something else. So I didn't really get – I mean, now I'm not by any means knocking Hank. I think Hugh Freeze is pleased with what he's seen from Hank, but I think it was more a – he got good answers from both his quarterbacks, Adam. Was that the way you felt?
That was Monday night when he said that on Tiger Talk. That was mm-hmm. kind of the vibe I got, was that like the responses were, I guess, appropriate or what he was hoping they'd be. But when he talked today on the teleconference, the vibe I got more than anything was that it was just like it was an interesting exercise that he had never done before. And I think, you know, when you look at that situation too, like those are two very different meetings. Like you're going into it with somebody who made the mistakes in the first place, and they're having to explain why they made the mistakes. Whereas, I mean, Hank, in a weird way, like, yes. I don't know what the right way to phrase it is, but it's like, you know, I mean, he's not coming into it like making the same mistakes that, that Peyton made in that game. And,
yeah,
and
he's able
to
second guess.
Explain himself, yeah. Right. So, like, I don't know that I really got a read that it was a situation where it was like, oh, like, Hank's got it and Peyton doesn't. But I think it was more so just an interesting exercise. But, you know, I mean, the vibe I've gotten from both of their responses were that they were, I guess, apt enough, I suppose.
Although if he came away enthused about the decisions Hank would have made in those situations, maybe it makes it easier to put Hank Brown on the field.
Yeah.
At some point, I don't know, you know, what's going on behind the closed doors.
Yeah, I was listening to another show early this morning,
that's okay.
And you'll know that. Well,
that's allowed. That's allowed. That's allowed. We weren't on. Yeah, that's allowed.
Well, it was Cole Kubelik, and he was. They were actually interviewing Trent Dilfer, and Cole even started with the thing. Look, dude, I know you don't like sometimes some of the questions that might happen. I'm going to ask you something about Hank Brown. And Trent was actually kind of uncomfortable answering the question, but he finally did and said, "Okay, I evaluate quarterbacks. There's 30 things I evaluate quarterbacks on. And Hank Brown is a 10 on one of the 30, and it's leadership. His next lowest score on the other 29 will be 8.5.
Well, I mean, I recall not this, and again, I'm not doubting that Hank has a chance to be good. I want to see that, and I hope he gets that opportunity. But I also recall Trent Dilfer saying that Shaun White was going to be a superstar.
Well, yeah,
maybe Shaun stayed healthy.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm surprised Trent Dilfer wants to talk with much of anybody after after the former interim UAB coach just put him in a garbage can over the weekend.
Listen, I will say this, and I'm not a Trent Dilfer fan because I think he's taken a couple of shots at Auburn, but he was extremely humble about what happened Saturday. So, I mean, I will say that.
That came out as a shot at Trent Dilfer, and it shouldn't have because he's doing his best at UAB. But that, you know what, a guy we've talked about before on the show, Bill, John Hartwell, is hiring good coaches at ULM, a guy who advocated to be the Auburn AD back in the day. He's hired a women's basketball coach who had immediately made an impact, and they're winning games after being a terrible program for a decade in that sport, and they're better than they should be. With Brian Vincent in year one at ULM.
Yeah. I'll say one last thing and I'll hush. But, you know, it's okay if he lets Peyton set a game. I mean, it won't be the first time in Auburn history this has happened. I mean, Jason Campbell had a horrible start and was set out a game. And I think it was Brandon Cox ended up playing that game. There's been several. Bo Nix, if you remember, he got set down a game and comes back after that sit out and played lights out. So sometimes it kind of helps to sort of, you know, rejuvenate your competitive spirit when you're sitting on the sideline.
Or see what the other guys have as well. I mean, we talked about what Alabama did last year with Jalen Milroe against South Florida. You know, he didn't play.
To me, Uncle Ollie, I feel like if the plan is to get Hank Brown first-team reps in the first quarter, who starts and who doesn't seems – I mean, it matters somewhat, but if you're talking about both the guys having – like if the first four drives of the game are going to be two for Peyton and two for Hank – the starter versus the next guy up isn't terribly
not terribly.
Now if someone's playing the whole first.
You can never assure that you're going to get multiple possessions
but if
in the first quarter.
If the plan is for one quarterback, if the plan is for one quarterback to play the whole first half, then it matters a lot who that starting quarterback is. But if the plan is for something else, it's starter versus next guy up isn't terribly important.
No, I agree with that. I think if you're going to do it, he should play a half. Or more. I mean, and then, again, it doesn't hurt to sit on the sideline and, you know, kind of, again, stir up your competitive juices and say, I'm not letting this guy take my job. I'm going to do whatever it takes, film study, whatever. This won't be the first time it's happened. And I hope Peyton succeeds. Listen, I'm an Auburn guy. I want Peyton to succeed. I just want anybody to succeed.
I hear you.
I'm not anti-Peyton at all.
Appreciate it, Uncle Ollie. Great hearing from you. We are running way behind. Got to get to our
good job, Adam.
Next break.
It's your
fault. Back with more of your phone calls here on the Wednesday Drive.
At ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Wednesday and right back to the Drive hotline. And Scott is up next. Hey, Scott.
Afternoon, gentlemen. How are y'all doing?
Doing all right.
Good deal. I've got a comparison as far as practice and play is concerned. Bill, you probably know me. I'm not going to say my last name, but I play golf at a real high level. And it's like going to a practice tee before a high-level golf tournament. You see guys striping on the tee, and they get on the golf course. They got one golf ball, and they got a pencil, and all of a sudden they can't do it because the lights are bigger, everything's live, and
a lot more eyes usually too.
Yeah, in another parallel, it's like a pitcher, Bill, this is right down your alley, throwing a bullpen against air, and they look great in a bullpen, and all of a sudden they get on the mound when somebody's in a batter's box and the lights are on, you got an umpire back there, and it's difficult to perform.
Yeah, they can't find the strike zone.
You know, and some guys can do it, some guys can't. And I'm not saying that Peyton or Hank or me or you or anybody else can, but it's just different from practice to play. The longest walk in golf is from the practice tee to the first tee. The longest walk in baseball is from the dugout to the pitcher's mound. And I would assume the longest walk in football is from the sidelines to the huddle. And if you practice, it's great. But some guys, for whatever reason, and girls, just have difficulty taking it when it counts the most.
Oh, there's no question. No question.
And there are some jobs. There are some jobs where even if you have all the right answers in practice, you only get a couple of mistakes, and then someone else sits in that chair, right? Air traffic controllers don't get to mess up too many times before someone else is sitting in that chair and they have the headset on instead. And no, I think it's got to be vexing for Hugh Freeze that if it's a guy you feel like is doing everything right, but when it comes time to make those snap correct decisions in a game, it's not what you're seeing during the week isn't translating.
Well, absolutely, and a good friend of mine coached golf at the highest level in college, and one of his greatest players hated to practice, and he told him, "Don't worry about practice, go out and play." And this guy was runner-up to Tiger Woods at the Masters one year. So it's more about playing than it is practicing. Yes, perfect practice makes perfect. But some guys, the practice thing just doesn't work for them, and get them out there and let them try it and see what happens.
Good stuff, Scott. Great hearing from you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys. Y'all have a good day.
All right. Adam, I'd love to get your thoughts. We've talked about this a lot here for the last couple of days. I understand completely what Hugh Freeze has been saying. I mean, it's very hard to not go with the guy who has been the best on the practice field. And we've had, you know, quite a few callers saying, you've got gamers sometimes that don't perform as well in practice. My feeling is, hey, up until this past Saturday, I don't feel that Hugh Freeze felt like he'd given everything to Peyton Thorne to be the best that he could be. But, you know, I'd love your thoughts on you know, where we are, how we got to where we are right now.
Man, As far as how we got to where we are, I mean,
that's a really long story.
I was going to say, I wish I had a succinct answer for that. Well, maybe I do.
15 seconds, we're up against the break.
We got longer than that.
I just think the reality of it is, like, this is the thing I keep going back to in my head, is it's like you put all your chips into Peyton Thorne this offseason. And you did that by going out and getting Keandre Lambert-Smith and signing this class that has the Freeze 4 in it. And you go get Percy Lewis and Ronan Chambers, and you're moving Dylan Wade inside. And this is all supposed to set up so that this guy, who's your incumbent, doesn't have to relearn this whole offense. And, you know, I can understand why you're not so quick to make a change, because the reality is you've got a pretty darn big bet on the table.
Big investment.
It's a huge investment. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, too, like, you know, I'm saying this without seeing Hank Brown or Holden Gariner or Walker White, like, run the offense come game time. But, you know, this is somebody who, in theory, is the best guy to run this offense. And, you know, I can understand giving pause like this early in the season, because there is still time, in theory, you know, for him to try to figure it out and work out kinks and make adjustments. And, you know, I'm curious to see how this weekend goes, because if the offense looks, you know, even a third of like what it was against Alabama A&M, it's like, you know, how quickly are we moved on from this storyline? But, you know, I don't blame him for not rushing to just put Hank Brown out there, especially considering, I mean, you know, Hank is a redshirt freshman. Like, Hank doesn't have the same experience that Peyton Thorne does, you know? So that's my understanding of why he's not so quick to make a switch. But, you know, it's just, it's a really big bet, and I can understand not wanting to fold just yet.
I mean, I would imagine at least some of the concern is, you know, Hugh Freeze doesn't want Hank Brown out there making mistakes that even Peyton Thorne wouldn't make,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that would be where, and if with a relative lack of experience at the college football level, I think that would be, especially replacing him mid-game.
Yes.
I think that would be like a valid, you know, a really valid reason to stay the course if you're not sure. But at some point, again, at some point, Peyton Thorne's decision making is part of the reason he's the best guy for the job. Mm-hmm. And if that was an issue on Saturday, if that remains an issue for, you know, in the short term, then I think the hand could be forced by Hugh Freeze, you know, to try something else.
Yeah, if you can't make the decisions and make the reads and get it out in time against Cal and New Mexico, like, yeah, I can understand wanting to make a change and seeing if you have somebody who, you know, can do it against Arkansas and Oklahoma the next 2 weeks who isn't named Peyton Thorne.
That's sort of the circumstance that got Mendoza in the mm-hmm. in the job for Cal. Like, he was, I mean, last year Cal tried a couple guys who had more experience, including Sam Jackson, as starting quarterbacks, and eventually said, you know what, homegrown, relatively unheralded recruit.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Yale commit, yeah, who was considering going to Alabama as a preferred walk-on before Cal came in with their offer, and he decides to go. He decides to go play out there for the Bears, and they give him a shot late last season, and then he beats out a transfer this offseason in the former ULM quarterback Chandler Rogers. So I mean, it's a story of it's not a common story in mm-hmm. college football, because there are so many transfer portal quarterbacks going to new places and winning the job. If you're in the Hank Brown camp, it's one of the stories that would say, "Hey, this can still happen if you look down the bench at the quarterback position. You may end up having, if the results are unsatisfactory from the starter, mm-hmm. You know, at some point you try your luck with somebody else."
All right, we will. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Back for the last segment of the Wednesday Drive. Stick with us.
Big eating and.